Basher fell toward the hard stone blocks below. He watched the window retreat above him.
Almost! I just about had him!
Basher pulled free the rope at his waist.
Grab things!
The rope wrapped around an outcropping of stone on the palace wall. It pulled taut, and he ran sideways along the ebony blocks, slowing his fall.
Your breath to mine!
The rope dropped free, and he landed on the first block.
Become as my leg and give it strength.
The rope twisted down, wrapping around his leg and foot as he leaped off. Basher landed on the next block, 1 foot down, the coiled rope and its strange, inhuman muscles bearing the brunt of the shock. Four hops, and he hit the ground. A group of soldiers stood amidst bodies at the front gates, looking confused. Basher barreled toward them. He scooped a sword from a fallen soldier. The men before the gates turned and readied their weapons. He didn't have the time or the patience for pleasantries. Basher wasn't as good as Dent, but he had practiced for a very, very long time. Unfortunately, there were a lot of men, maybe too many to fight. Basher bent down, slapping his hand against the waist of a fallen soldier, touching both shirt and pants, looping his finger around the colored inner undershirt.
Fight for me as if you were me!
The magic drained the man's undershirt completely gray. Basher spun, blocking a sword strike. There were just too many weapons. He couldn't block them all. The sword flashed in the air, blocking the weapon that would have hit Basher. The dead man's shirt and trousers, having pulled themselves free, stood holding a blade. They struck as if controlled by an invisible person inside, blocking and attacking with skill. Basher put his back to the awakened construct. When he had a chance, he made another one.
Fight for me as if you were me.
They fought in a trio, Basher and his two sets of awakened clothing. The guards were much more wary now. Basher eyed them, planning an attack. At that moment, a troop of some 50 lifeless barreled around the corner, charging toward him.
Colors! Yeah! Colors! Colors! Colors!
You shouldn't swear. Shashara told me that was evil.
Nightblood?
Basher spun toward the sound. A little line of black smoke was trailing out from beneath the closed front doors of the palace.
Aren't you going to thank me? I came to save you.
One of his sets of clothing fell, the leg cut off by soldier's clever strike. Basher recovered the breath from both pairs of clothing.
Your breath to mine.
The soldiers backed away, more than happy to let the lifeless take him. And at that moment of peace, Basher charged for the gates to the palace. Basher skidded to a stop in the entryway. A large group of men lay dead on the ground. Nightblood sprouted from one man's chest, as usual, hilt pointing toward the sky. Basher hesitated only briefly. He could hear lifeless charging up behind him. The blade sprayed a wave of black liquid as he swung it. The liquid dissolved into smoke before touching walls or floor, like water in an oven. Smoke twisted, some rising from the blade, some falling in a stream to the floor, dripping like black blood.
Destroy! The evil must be destroyed!
Pain shot at Basher's arm, and he felt his breath being leached away, sucked into the blade, fueling its hunger. Drawing the weapon had a terrible cost. At that moment, he didn't really care. He spun toward the charging lifeless, and... Each creature he struck with the blade immediately flashed and became smoke. A single scratch and the bodies dissolved like paper being consumed by an invisible fire, leaving behind only the large stain of blackness in the air. Basher spun among them, striking with wrath, killing lifeless after lifeless. Black smoke churned around him, and his arm twisted with pain as vein-like tendrils climbed up the hilt and around his forearm, like black blood vessels that latched onto his skin, feeding off his breath. In a matter of minutes, the breath Vivenna had given him had been reduced by half. The but in those moments, he destroyed all 50 lifeless. The soldiers outside pulled to a halt, watching the display. Vasha stood amidst a churning mass of deep ebony smoke. It slowly rose into the air, the only remnants of the 50 creatures he had destroyed. The soldiers ran away. Vasha charged toward the side of the room. He slammed Nightblood through a wall. The stone dissolved just as easily as flesh had, evaporating away before him. He burst through the dissipating black smoke, entering the next room. He didn't bother with the stairwell. He simply jumped onto a table and rammed Nightblood into the ceiling. A circle 10 feet wide vanished. Dark mist like smoke fell around him like streaks of paint.
Grab things!
Usher awakened his rope again, then tossed it up, using it to pull himself up onto the next floor. A moment later, he did it again, climbing onto the third floor. He spun, slashing through walls, running back toward Denth. The pain in his arm was incredible, and his breath was draining away at an alarming rate. Once it was gone, Nightblood would kill him. Everything was growing fuzzy. Vasha slashed through a final wall, finding the room where he had been tortured. It was empty. Vasha's arm shook horribly.
Destroy evil!
The longer Vasha held the sword, the faster it drained his breath. Vasha knelt, arm twitching. The black veins on his skin slowly evaporated. He was left with just barely enough breath to reach the first tightening. Another few seconds, and Nightblood would have sucked the rest away. Something fell to the tiled floor in front of him. A dueling blade. Vasha looked up.
Stand up. We're going to finish what we started.
Bluefingers led Ciri, held by several lifeless, up to the fourth floor of the palace, the top floor. They entered a room lavishly decorated with rich colors, even for Halandrin. Lifeless guards there let them pass, bowing their heads to Bluefingers.
My people will not fall for this. They won't fight Halandrin. They'll retreat through the passes. Take refuge in the Highland Valleys or one of the Outer Kingdoms.
The front of the room held a black block of stone shaped like an altar. Ciri frowned. From behind, a group of lifeless entered the room, carrying the corpses of several priests. She saw Trelidy's body among them.
What?
Bluefingers turned toward her.
We'll make certain they're angry, trust me. When this is through, Princess, Idris will fight until either it or Halandrin is destroyed.
They tossed someone into the cell next to Lightsong. He looked up with weary eyes, uncaring. It was another returned. Which of the gods had they taken captive now?
The God King. Interesting.
He looked down again. What did it matter? He'd failed Blushweaver. He'd failed everyone. The lifeless armies were probably already marching on Idris. Halandrin and Idris would fight, and the Pan Kahl would have their revenge. It had been 300 years coming. Vasher held the dueling sword in a weak hand, looking at Denth, still shaken by his use of Nightblood. The empty black hallway was now open around them. Vasher had destroyed several of the walls. It was amazing the roof hadn't fallen in. Corpses littered the floor, the result of the fights when Denth's men had taken over the palace.
I'll let you die easily. Just tell me the truth. You never beat Arsteel in a duel, did you?
Vasher raised his own blade. The cuts, the pain in his arm, the exhaustion of being awakened so long, it was all wearing on him.
Have it your way.
Denth had always been better at swordplay. Vasher had been better at research. But what had battered him. Discoveries that had caused the Menuar, an army of monsters that had killed so many. Denth drove his blade through Vasha's left shoulder, Denth's favorite place for a first strike. It allowed his opponent to keep fighting, wounded, and drew out the fight for Denth's enjoyment.
You never beat Arsteel.
You're going to kill me on an altar?
Around Ciri, other lifeless placed bodies on the floor.
It doesn't make sense, Bluefingers. You don't follow their religion. Why do this?
Bluefingers stood to the side, holding a knife. She could see the shame in his eyes.
Bluefingers. Bluefingers, you don't have to do this.
After all I've already done, do you think one more death means anything to me?
After all you've done, do you really think one more death will matter for your cause?
Oh, yes. You know how the Idrians whisper of the things that go on in the Court of Gods. Your people hate and distrust the Halandrin priests. They speak of murders done on dark altars in the backs of the palaces. Well, we are going to let a group of those Idrian mercenaries see this once you are dead. We'll show them that we were too late to save you, that the twisted priests had already killed you on one of their profane altars. We'll show them the dead priests we killed trying to save you. The Idrians will riot in the city. They're strained to snapping anyway. We have you to thank for that. The city will be in chaos, and there will be a slaughter, the like of which hasn't been seen since the Menuar, as the Halandrin kill Idrian peasants to maintain order. Those Idrians that live will return to their homeland to tell the tale. They'll let everyone know that the Halandrins only wanted a princess of the royal blood so that they could sacrifice her to their god king. It is exaggerated and foolish to think that the Halandrins would really do such a thing. But sometimes the wildest tales are the ones best believed, and the Idrians will accept this one. You know they will.
And Ciri did. She'd heard similar stories since her childhood. Halandrin was remote to her people. Frightening, bizarre. Ciri struggled, feeling even more worried.
I am truly sorry.
I am nothing. Why couldn't I save her? Why couldn't I protect her?
A tear rolled down Lightsong's cheek. Oddly, he wasn't the only one crying. The God King. He didn't speak, though, or denounce his captors.
I wonder why that is.
Men approached the God King's cell. Khan Kaal men with weapons. Their expressions were grim. Lightsong found it hard to care.
You are a god.
Larimar's words still challenged him. The high priest lay in his own cell to Lightsong's left, eyes closed against the terrors around them.
You are a god. To me, at least.
No, I'm nothing. No god. Not even a good man.
You are. To me.
What?
Lightsong was on a ship, tossing, pitching on a dark sea. Lightsong stood on the deck, trying to stay upright on the slick boards. Part of him knew it was simply a hallucination, that he was still back in the prison cell. But it felt real, very real. The waves churned, and the ship's motion slammed his face against the wall of the ship's cabin. Light from a pole-mounted lantern flickered uncertainly. It seemed weak compared to the lightning, which was so violent and angry. Lightsong blinked. His face was pressed up against something painted on the wood. A red panther, glistening in the lantern light in the rain.
The name of the ship. The Red Panther.
He wasn't Lightsong. Or he was, but he was a much smaller, pudgier version of himself. A man accustomed to being a scribe, to working long hours counting coins, checking ledgers, seeking for lost money. That's what he'd done. People hired him to discover where they'd been cheated, or if a contract hadn't been paid properly. His job was to look through the books, searching out hidden or confusing twists of arithmetic. A detective. Waves crashed against the boat. Larimar was on the prow. He looked quite a few years younger.
Help! Can somebody help?
Deckhands rushed to his aid. It wasn't Larimar's ship, or even Lightsong's. They borrowed it for a simple pleasure trip. Sailing was a hobby of Larimar's. The storm had come on suddenly. Lightsong lurched back to his feet, barely managing to stay up as he made his way forward, clutching the railing. Waves surged across the deck, and sailors struggled to keep the boat from capsizing. The sails were gone. Only tattered shreds remained. Black, dark water churned in the ocean just to his right.
Stenimore, lash down those barrels quickly!
Lightsong nodded, grabbing a rope and tying one end to a davit. A wave hit. He froze, gripping the rope, looking into the sea's mad, terrifying depths. He shook himself free, then tied the rope in a wide slipknot.
Help! I need help at the prow!
And suddenly, a young woman left the cabin and ran across the deck, grabbing ropes as if to lend assistance. A woman watched from the cabin with terror-filled eyes. Lightsong looked up. He recognized the girl.
Tatara, go back inside. Get back in the cabin, please.
Tatara turned to look at Lightsong. The next wave tossed her into the ocean.
Tatara! No!
Lightsong watched, shocked. The deep blackness claimed his niece, engulfed her, swallowed her. He felt useless, his heart thumping with fright as he watched the young woman get swept into the churning current. He saw flashes of her golden hair twisting in the water, a weak splash of color passing his side of the ship. It would soon be gone.
Somebody help! Tatara!
Lightsong just stared into the bubbling deep, with its alternating froth and blackness, the terrible, terrible blackness. He still held the rope in his hand. Without thinking, he leaped up onto the railing and threw himself into the darkness. Lightsong reached out, thrashing and churning in the tempest. He barely knew how to swim. Something passed him. Lightsong grabbed it, her foot. He threw the loop around her ankle, somehow managing to get the knot tight despite the water and the waves. As soon as he did, a surge in the undulating water yanked him away, sucking him down. He reached upward, toward where lightning lit the surface. That light grew distant as he sank, down into the black deep, claimed by the void. Lightsong sat on the cool stones of his cell. The void had taken him, but something had sent him back. He'd returned because he'd seen war and destruction. Lightsong looked over as the fake priests grabbed Suzebron, and Lightsong could see into the God King's mouth.
No tongue, of course. To keep him from using all that biochroma, it makes sense.
Lightsong turned to the side. Blushweaver's body lay red and bloodied. He'd seen that in a vision. In the vague shadows of morning memory, he'd thought that the image had been of her blushing. But now he remembered. He looked to the side. Larimar, eyes closed as if asleep. That image had been in his dream as well. Lightsong realized the man had them shut as he wept. The God King in prison. Lightsong had seen that too, but above it all, he remembered standing on the other side of a brilliant, colorful wave of light, looking down at the world from the other side, and seeing everything he loved dissolve into the destruction of war. A war greater than any the world had known. A war more deadly, even, than the Many War. He remembered the other side. And he remembered a voice.
It does not have to be. Will you save the world you love? Will you be the champion of the brave? Will you return?
By the colors, I am a god.
The priests forced the God King to his knees. Lightsong stepped forward, moving up to the bars of his cage. He saw pain and tears in the God King's face, and somehow understood them. The man did love Ciri. Lightsong had seen the same thing in the Queen's eyes. She had somehow come to care for the man who was to oppress her.
You are my king and lord of the gods.
The
Upon call, men forced the God King face down on the stones. One of the priests raised a sword. Lightsong met the man's eyes, then smiled broadly. And then, Lightsong reached through the bars and touched the God King's leg.
I have seen the void, and I came back.
Dent slashed, wounding Vasher in the leg. Vasher went down on one knee. Dent backed off.
Oh, you are pathetic, Vasher. There you kneel about to die, and you still think you're better than the rest of us. You judge me for becoming a mercenary? What else was I to do? Take over kingdoms, rule them, and start wars as you did?
Vasher bowed his head. Vasher reached for a knife in the belt of a fallen soldier, but Dent stepped up and put his booted foot on Vasher's hand.
You think I should just go back to the way I was before? The happy, friendly man everyone loved?
You were a good person.
That man saw and did terrible things. I've tried, Vasher. I've tried going back. But the darkness, it's inside. I can't escape it. My laughter has an edge to it. I can't forget.
I can make you. I know the commands.
Dent froze.
I promise. I will take it all from you if you wish.
Dent stood for a long moment on Vasher's arm, sword lowered.
No. I don't deserve that. Neither of us do. Goodbye, Vasher.
Dent raised his blade to strike, and Vasher moved his arm up, touching Dent's leg.
My life to yours. My breath become yours.
50 breaths fled from Vasher's chest and surged into Dent's body. It would be unwelcome, but he couldn't turn them away. 50 breaths. Not many, but enough. Enough to make Dent shake with pleasure. Enough to make him lose control for just a second, falling to his knees. Vasher slashed the dagger through Dent's throat.
Nobody ever expects it. Breath is worth a fortune. To put it into someone, then kill them, is to lose more wealth than most men will ever know. They never expect it.
Dent shook, lost control. His hair suddenly bled to deep black, then blonde, then an angry red. Finally, the hair turned white with terror and stayed there.
You wanted to know how I killed Arsteel? Well, now you do.
Blue Fingers picked up a knife.
The least I can do is to kill you myself, rather than letting the lifeless do it. I promise it will be quick. We will make it look like a pagan ritual afterward, sparing you the need to die in a painful way.
Bluefingers turned to her lifeless captors.
Tie her to the altar!
The lifeless held Ciri by the shoulders. They were terribly strong, and her hands were tied together. She couldn't possibly resist them.
Bluefingers, I will not die tied to some rock like a useless maid from one of the stories. You want me dead? Then have the decency to let me die standing up.
But you... Oh, very well. Hold her tightly.
You realize the wonderful opportunity you waste by killing me? The wife of the God King would make a wonderful hostage. You're a fool to kill me, and... please!
Bluefingers ignored her this time, taking the knife, placing it against her chest, picking his spot. She started to feel numb. She was going to die. She was actually going to die. And the war would start. Bluefingers looked at her, hesitated, then grew grim and drew back the dagger. Newfingers looked to the side in alarm, glancing toward several of his scribes. They shook their heads in confusion.
An earthquake?
The floor began to turn white. The color moved like a wave of sunlight crossing the land as the sun rose above the mountains. The walls, the ceiling, the floor, all of the black stone faded. The priest stepped away from it, looking frightened. Bluefingers looked at her, confused. The ground continued to tremble, but he raised his blade anyway, held his fingers that had been stained repeatedly by ink, and strangely, Ciri saw the whites of his eyes bend and release a rainbow of colors. The entire room burst with color, the white stones fuzzing and splitting like light through a prism. The doors to the room exploded. A twisting mass of colorful cloth shot through it like the countless tentacles of an enraged sea leviathan. They churned and curled, and Ciri recognized tapestries, carpets, and long lengths of silk from the palace decorations. Awakened cloth slapped aside lifeless, curling around them, tossing them into the air. Priest was snatched up, and a long, thin length of violet cloth snapped forward and wrapped around Bluefinger's arm. The surging mat undulated, churning, and Ciri could finally see a figure walking in the middle of it. A man of epic proportions, black of hair, pale of face, youthful in appearance, but of great age. Bluefinger struggled to ram his knife into Ciri's chest, but the God King raised a hand.
You will stop!
Bluefingers looked toward the God King in amazement. The dagger slipped from his stunned fingers as an awakened carpet twisted around him, pulling him away from Ciri. Ciri stood dumbfounded. Suzebron's clothes lifted him up and over beside her, and a pair of small silken handkerchiefs reached forward, sliding around the ropes binding her hands, untying them with ease. Ciri grabbed him and let him lift her into his arms. The Venom looked up, gagged and bound at Vasher's silhouette. He dragged Nightblood behind him, covered as usual by his silver sheath. Looking very tired, Vasher knelt and undid her gag.
About time.
I don't have any breath remaining. It was very hard to locate you.
Where did it all go?
Nightblood devoured most of it.
I don't believe him! I can't really remember what happened. But we did slay a lot of evil.
You drew him?
Yes.
Denth?
Dead. No sign of Tonkvar or the woman Jules. I think they took the money and fled.
So it's over.
Vasher nodded, sliding down to seat himself, resting his head against the wall.
And we lost.
What do you mean?
Denth was being employed by some of the Pond Call scribes in the palace. They wanted to start a war between Idris and Halondrin in the hope it would weaken both kingdoms and let Pond Call gain independence.
So? Denth is dead now.
So are the scribes who had the command phrases for the lifeless armies. And they already dispatched the troops. The lifeless left the city over an hour ago, charging for Idris. All of this fighting, everything with Denth, that was secondary. It distracted us. They couldn't get to the lifeless in time. The war has begun. There's no way to stop it.
Suzebron led Ciri down into the depths of the palace. Ciri walked beside him, carefully cradled in his arm, 100 twisting lengths of cloth spinning around them. Even with that many things awakened, he still had enough breath to make every color they passed glow brightly. Of course, that didn't work for many of the stones they passed, though large chunks of the building were still black, at least half of it had been turned white. Not just the gray of normal awakening. They had been made bone white. And becoming that white, they now reacted to his incredible biochroma, splitting back into colors.
Like a circle, somehow. Colorful, then white, then back to color.
Suzebron led her into a particular chamber, and she saw what he told her to expect. Scribes crushed by the carpets that he'd awakened, bars ripped from their mountings, walls broken down. She wasn't paying much attention. In the midst of the rubble were a pair of corpses. One was Blushweaver, bloody and red, face down. The other was Lightsong, his entire body drained of color, like he was a lifeless. His eyes were closed, and he seemed to sleep, as if at peace. A man sat next to him, Lightsong's high priest, holding the god's head in his lap. The priest looked up. He smiled, though she could see tears in his eyes.
I don't understand.
Lightsong gave his life to heal me. He somehow knew that my tongue had been removed.
The returned can heal one person. It's their duty to decide who and when. They come back for this purpose, some say. To give life to one person who needs it.
I never knew him.
He was a very good person.
Though I never spoke to him, somehow he was noble enough to die so that I might live.
The amazing thing is, Lightsong did that twice.
He told me that I couldn't depend on him in the end. I guess he lied about that. How very like him.
There has to be a way, Vasher.
Vasher tried to push down his rage, his anger at himself. He'd come to the city to stop a war. Once again, he'd been too late.
40,000 lifeless. I can't stop that many. Not even with night blood and the breaths of every person in the city. Even if I could somehow keep up with their marching, one would eventually get in a lucky strike and kill me.
There has to be a way.
I thought the same thing before. I wanted to stop it, but by the time I realized what was happening, it had gone too far. It had taken on a life of its own.
What are you talking about?
The Many War.
Who are you?
Vasher buried his head in his hands.
They used to call him Talaxin.
Talaxin? Nightblood. That's one of the five scholars. He lived over 300 years ago.
Biochroma can keep a man alive a long time.
They used to call him other things, too.
If you're really one of them, then you'll know how to stop the lifeless.
Sure. With other lifeless.
That's it?
The easiest. Barring that, we can chase them down and grab them one at a time, then break them and replace their command phrases. But even if you had the Eighth Heightening to let you break commands instinctively, changing so many would take weeks. We could have an army fight them, but they are our army. The Halandran forces aren't large enough to fight the lifeless on their own, and they wouldn't be able to get to Idris with any semblance of speed. The lifeless will beat them by days. Lifeless don't sleep, don't eat, and can march tirelessly.
Ichor alcohol. They'll run out.
It's not like food, Vivenna. It's like blood. They need a new supply if they get caught and drained, or if it gets corrupted. A few will probably stop working without maintenance, but only a small number.
Well then, we awaken an army of our own to fight them.
Awaken an army of our own? First, where would we get the breath? I used all of yours. Even if we find my clothing, which still has some in it, we'll only have a couple hundred. It takes one per lifeless. We're severely overmatched.
The God King
can't use his breath. The man's tongue was removed when he was a child.
And you can't get it out of him somehow?
The Tenth Heightening allows a man to command mentally, without speaking, but it can take months of training to learn how to do that, even if you have someone to teach you. I think his priests must know how, so they can transfer that wealth of breath from one king to another, but I doubt they've trained him yet. One of their duties is to keep him from using his breaths in the first place.
He's still our best option.
Oh, and you'll use his power how? Make lifeless? Are you forgetting that we'll need to find 40,000 bodies?
Vasher, didn't you leave an army behind here last time?
Vivenna opened her eyes. Apparently, Nightblood had decided to include her in all of his thoughts now.
What's Nightblood talking about?
Nothing.
No, it's not. I remember. You talked to that priest, told him to take care of your breath for you, should you need it again. And you gave him your army. It stopped moving. You called it a gift for the city. Don't you remember? It was just yesterday.
Yesterday?
When the many wars stopped. When was that?
He doesn't understand time. Don't listen to him.
No, he knows something. Kalad's army, his phantoms. You know where they are.
Yes.
Where?
Here, in the city.
We have to use them.
You're asking me to give Halandrin a tool, Vivenna. A terrible tool, something worse than what they have now.
And if that army of theirs slaughters my people, could what you're talking about give them more power than that?
Yes.
Do it anyway. Please, Vasher.
Vasher closed his eyes again, remembering the destruction he had caused. The wars that had started, all because of the things he'd learned to create.
You would give your enemies such power?
They're not my enemies, even if I hate them.
Let's find the God King. If he even still lives, then we shall see.
My lord and lady.
The priest bowed with his face down before them.
We heard rumors of a plot to attack the palace. That's why we locked you away. We wanted to protect you.
Ciri looked at the man, then glanced at Suzebron. The God King rubbed his chin in thought. They both recognized this man as one of his actual priests rather than an imposter. They'd only been able to determine that with certainty for a handful of them. They imprisoned the others, sending for the city guard to come in and start cleaning up the wreckage of the palace. The breeze blew Ciri's hair, red to show her displeasure, as they stood atop the palace.
There, my lord.
Suzebron turned, walking over to the edge of the palace. Most of his entourage of twisting cloths were no longer streaming about him, but they waited on his will in a pile on the rooftop. Ciri joined him at the side of the palace, and in the distance, she could make out a smudge and what looked like smoke.
The lifeless army. Our scouts have confirmed that it's marching toward Idris. Almost everyone in the city saw it pass out through the gates.
That smoke?
Dust of its passing, my lady. That's a lot of soldiers.
I could stop them.
My lord?
With this much breath, I could charge them.
There are 40,000 of them. They would cut at the cloth, overwhelm you.
I have to try.
No.
Your people.
We'll send messengers explaining our regret. My people can withdraw, ambush the lifeless. We can send troops to help.
We don't have many, and they won't get there very quickly. Could your people really get away?
No. You don't know that, though. And you're innocent enough to believe they can escape.
Ciri's people might survive as a whole, but many would die. Suzebron getting himself killed fighting the creatures wouldn't be of much use, however. He had amazing power, but fighting so many lifeless was well beyond the scope of whatever he could do.
You don't believe that they can get away. You're just trying to protect me.
Surprising how well he understands me already.
My lord!
Suzebron turned, looking across the top of the palace. They'd come to the top partially to get a look at the lifeless, but also because both Ciri and Suzebron were tired of being closed in tight quarters. They wanted to be in the open, where it would be harder to sneak up on them. A guard came out of the stairwell, then walked over, hand on sword.
My lord! There's someone here to see you.
I don't want to see anyone. Who are they?
My lord, the visitor, she has the royal locks.
What?
The guard turned and, shockingly, Vivenna stepped up onto the roof of the palace. Ciri thought it was Vivenna. She wore trousers and a tunic, with a sword tied at her waist, and she appeared to have a bloody wound on one shoulder. She saw Ciri and smiled, her hair turning yellow with joy.
Vivenna's hair changing? It can't be her.
Vivenna ran over, embracing Ciri.
Vivenna?
Yes, mostly.
Vivenna glanced at Suzebron.
I'm sorry. I came to the city to try rescuing you.
That was very kind of you, but I don't need rescuing.
Vivenna frowned more deeply.
And who is this, Ciri?
My eldest sister.
Ah, Ciri has told me much about you, Princess Vivenna. I wish we could have met under better circumstances.
Vivenna stared at the man with shock.
He's really not as bad as they say, most of the time.
That is sarcasm. She is quite fond of it.
Vivenna turned from the God King.
Our homeland is under attack.
I know. We're working on that. I'm preparing messengers to send to Father.
I have a better way, but you'll have to trust me.
Of course.
I have a friend who needs to speak with the God King, where he can't be overheard by guards.
Ciri hesitated for a moment.
Oh, silly. This is Vivenna. I can trust her.
Ciri had thought she could trust Bluefingers, too. Vivenna regarded her with a curious expression.
If I can help save Idris, then I will do it. Who is this person?
Moments later, Vivenna stood quietly on the roof of the palace with the God King of Halandrin. Ciri stood a short walk away, watching the lifeless churn dust in the distance. All of them waited while the soldiers searched Vasha for weapons. He stood with arms upraised on the other side of the rooftop, surrounded by suspicious guards. He had wisely left Nightblood below and didn't have any other weapons on him. He didn't even have any breath.
Your sister is an amazing woman.
Vivenna glanced at him. This was the man she was to have married. The terrible creature that she was supposed to have given herself to. She'd never expected to end up like this, pleasantly chatting with him. She'd also never expected that she'd like him. It was a quick judgment. She'd gotten over chastising herself for making those, though she had learned to leave them open for revision. She saw kindness in his fondness for Ciri. How had a man like this ended up as God King of terrible Halandrin?
Yes, she is.
I love her. I would have you know this.
Slowly, Vivenna nodded, glancing over at Ciri.
She's changed so much. When did she become so regal? With that commanding bearing and ability to keep her hair black.
Her little sister, no longer quite as little, seemed to wear the expensive dress well. It fit her. Odd. On the other end of the rooftop, the guards took Vasha behind a screen to change. They obviously wanted to be certain none of his clothing was awakened. He left a few moments later, wearing a wrap around his waist, but nothing else. His chest was cut and bruised, and Vivenna thought it shameful that he should be forced to undergo such humiliation. He suffered it, walking across the rooftop with an escort. As he did, Ciri walked back, eyes watching him keenly. Vivenna had spoken with her sister briefly, but could already tell that Ciri no longer took pride in being unimportant. Changed indeed. Vasha glanced at Vivenna, and she thought he might tell her to go. However, he finally just turned away from her, looking resigned.
Who are you? The one responsible for you getting your tongue cut out?
Suzebron raised an eyebrow. Vasha closed his eyes. He didn't speak, didn't use his breath or make a command. Yet suddenly, he started to glow. Not like a lantern would glow, not as the sun glowed, but with an aura that made colors brighter. Vivenna started as Vasha increased in size. He opened his eyes and adjusted the wrap at his waist, making room for his growth. His chest became more firm, the muscles bulging, and the scruffy beard on his face retreated, leaving him clean-shaven. His hair turned golden. He still bore the cuts on his body, but they seemed inconsequential. He seemed divine. The God King watched with interest. He was now faced by a fellow god, a man of his own stature.
I don't care if you believe me or not, but I will have you know that I left something here long ago, a wealth of power that I promised to one day recover. I gave instructions for its care and a charge that it should not be used. The priests apparently took this to heart.
Suzebron, surprisingly, dropped to one knee.
My lord, where have you been?
Paying for what I've done, or trying to. That is unimportant. Stand.
What is going on?
Ciri looked equally confused, and the sisters shared a look. Suzebron stood, though he kept his posture reverent.
You have a group of rogue lifeless. You've lost control of them.
I'm sorry, my lord.
Vasha regarded him. Then he glanced at Vivenna. She nodded her head.
I trust him.
It's not about trust. Either way, I'm going to give you something.
What?
My army.
But my lord, our lifeless just marched away to attack Idris.
No, not that army. I'm going to give you the one I left behind 300 years ago. The people call them Kalad's Phantoms. They are the force by which I made Halandrin stop its war.
Stop the mini-war, my lord? You did that by negotiation.
You don't know much about war, do you?
No.
Well, learn. Because I charge you with command of my army. Use it to protect, not attack. Use it only in an emergency.
The God King nodded dumbly.
My sin be hidden.
What?
It's a command phrase. The one you can use to give new orders to the Daedonir statues I left in your city.
But, my lord, stone cannot be awakened.
The stone hasn't been awakened. There are human bones in those statues. They are lifeless.
Human bones. Vivenna felt a chill. He'd told her that bones were usually a bad choice to awaken because it was hard to keep them in the shape of a man during the awakening process. But what if those bones were encased in stone? Stone which held its shape, stone which would protect them from harm, make them nearly impossible to hurt or break. Awakened objects could be so much stronger than human muscles. If a lifeless could be created from bones, made strong enough to move a rock body around it, you'd have soldiers unlike any that had ever existed.
There are some 1,000 original Daedonir in the city, and most of them should function, even still. I created them to last.
But they have no ichor alcohol. They don't even have veins.
Vasher looked at her. It was him. The same look to the face, the same expressions. He hadn't changed shape to look like someone else. He just looked like a returned version of himself. What was going on?
We didn't always have ichor alcohol. It makes the awakening easier and cheaper, but it isn't the only way. And in the minds of many, I believe it has become a crutch.
Vasher glanced to the God King again.
You should be able to imprint them quickly with a new security phrase. Then order them out to stop the other army. I think you'll find the phantoms of mine to be very effective. Weapons are virtually useless against the stone.
Suzebron nodded again.
They are your responsibility now. Do better with them than I did.
The next day, an army of 1,000 stone soldiers charged from the gates of the city, running down the highway after the lifeless who had left the day before. Vivenna stood outside the city, leaning against the wall, watching them go.
How often did I stand under the gaze of those Daedonir, never knowing they were alive, just waiting to be commanded again?
Everyone said that Peacegiver had left the statues behind as a gift to the people, a symbol to remind them not to go to war. She'd always found it strange. A bunch of statues of soldiers, a gift to remind the people that war was terrible. And yet, they were a gift. The gift that had ended the mini-war. She turned toward Vasher. He too leaned against the city wall, Nightblood in one hand. His body had reverted to its mortal form, scraggly hair and all.
What was that first thing you taught me about awakening?
We don't know much. That there are hundreds, perhaps thousands of commands that we haven't discovered yet.
That's the one. I think you are right.
You think?
Will they really be able to stop the other army?
Probably. They'll be fast enough to catch up. The flesh lifeless won't be able to march as quickly as the ones with stone feet. I've seen those things fight before. They're really tough to beat.
So my people will be safe.
Unless the God King decides to use the lifeless statues to conquer them.
Has anyone ever told you that you're a grump, Vasher?
Finally, someone agrees with me.
I'm not a grump. I'm just bad with words.
Vivenna smiled.
Well, that's it then. See you around.
With that, Vasher began to walk along the pathway away from the city. Vivenna walked up next to him.
What are you doing?
Going with you.
You're a princess. Stay with that girl who rules Halandrin. I'll go back to Idris and be proclaimed as the heroine who saved them. Either way will give you a happy life.
No, I don't think so. Even if my father did take me back, I doubt that I'll ever be able to live a happy life in either a plush palace or a quiet town.
You'll think differently after a little time on the road. It's a difficult life.
I know, but, well, everything I've been, everything I was trained to do has been a lie, wrapped in hatred. I don't want to go back to it. I'm not that person. I don't want to be.
Who are you then?
I don't know. But I think I'll find the answer out there.
Your family will worry about you.
They'll get over it.
Finally, Vasher just shrugged.
All right. I don't really care.
It's true. I don't want to go back.
Princess Vivenna was dead. She died on the streets of Taetalir. Vivenna the Awakener had no desire to bring her back.
So, I can't figure it out. Which one are you? Kalad who started the war, or Peacegiver who ended it?
It's odd what history does to a man. I guess people couldn't understand why I suddenly changed, why I stopped fighting, and why I brought the Phantoms back to seize control of my own kingdom. So they decided I must have been two people. A man can get confused about his identity when things like that happen.
You're still returned, though.
Of course I am.
Where did you get the breath? The one a week you need to survive.
I carried them with me, on top of the one that makes me returned. In a lot of ways, returned aren't quite what people think they are. They don't automatically have hundreds or thousands of breath.
But
they're of the fifth heightening. But they don't get there by the number of breaths, but by the quality. Returned have a single powerful breath, one that takes them all the way to the fifth heightening. It's a divine breath, you might say. But their body feeds on breath, like
the sword.
Nightblood only needs it when he's drawn. Returned feed off their breath once a week, so if you don't give them one, they essentially eat themselves, devouring their one single breath, killing them. However, if you give them extra breath on top of their single divine one, they'll feed off those each week.
So the Halandrin gods could be fed more than one. They could have a stock of breaths, a buffer, to keep them alive if one couldn't be provided.
Wouldn't make them as dependent on their religion to care for them, though.
That's a cynical way of looking at it.
Vasher shrugged.
So you're going to burn up a breath every week, reducing our stock?
I used to have thousands of breath. I ate all of those.
Thousands? But it would take you years and years to...
Vasher had been alive for over 300 years. If he absorbed 50 breaths a year, that was thousands of breaths.
You're an expensive guy to keep around. How do you keep yourself from looking like a returned?
That's my secret. Though you should have figured out that returned can change their forms.
Vivenna raised an eyebrow.
You've got returned blood in you. The royal line. Where do you think that ability to change your hair color comes from?
Does that mean I can change more than just my hair?
Maybe. It takes time to learn. Go stroll around the Halandrin court of the gods sometime, though. You'll find that the gods look exactly as they think they should. The old ones look old. The heroic ones become strong. The ones who think a goddess should be beautiful become unnaturally voluptuous. It's all about how they perceive themselves.
And this is how you perceive yourself, Vasher? As the scraggly man, rough and unkempt?
Vivenna said nothing of that. She just walked on, her life sense letting her feel the jungle around them. They'd recovered Vasher's cloak, shirt, and trousers, the ones that Denth had originally taken from him. There had been enough breath in those to split between the two of them and get them each to the second heightening. It wasn't as much as she was used to, but it was a fair bit better than nothing.
So where are we going anyway?
Ever heard of Kuth and Huth?
Sure. They were your main rivals in the mini-war.
Somebody's trying to restore them. A tyrant of some kind. He's apparently recruited an old friend of mine.
Another one?
There were five of us. Me, Denth, Shashara, Arsteel, and Yesteel. It looks like Yesteel has resurfaced, finally.
He's related to Arsteel.
Brothers.
Great.
I know. He's the one who originally figured out how to make Ichor alcohol. I hear rumors he's got a new form of it, more potent.
Even better?
They walked in silence for a time longer.
I'm bored. Pay attention to me. Why doesn't anyone ever talk to me?
Because you're annoying.
What
What's your real name?
My real name?
Yes, everyone calls you things. Peacegiver, Kalad, Vasher, Talaxin. Is that last one your real name? The name of the scholar?
No.
Well, what is it then?
I don't know. I can't remember the time before I returned.
Oh.
When I came back, however, I did get a name. The Cult of the Returned. Those who eventually founded the Halandran Iridescent Tones found me and kept me alive with breaths. They gave me a name. I didn't like it much. Didn't seem to fit me.
Well, what was it?
Warbreaker. The Peaceful.
Favenna raised an eyebrow.
What I can't figure out is whether that was truly prophetic, or if I'm just trying to live up to it.
Does it matter?
No. No, I guess it doesn't. I just wish I knew if there is really something spiritual about the Returns, or if it's all just cosmic happenstance.
Probably not for us to know.
Probably.
Should have called you Wart Lover the Ugly.
Very mature. You really think those sorts of comments are proper for a princess?
I don't care. And I never have to again.
Warbreaker Part 3 is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2009 by Brandon Sanderson. All rights reserved. Recorded with the permission of the Authro and Dragonsteel Entertainment, LLC. Production copyright 2009 by The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. With performances by Elizabeth Jernigan, Colleen Delaney, James Konacek, Tim Getman, Steve Carpenter, Ren Casey, David Coyne, Richard Rowan, Ken Jackson, Amanda Thickpenny, Lily Beacon, Scott McCormick, Mort Shelby, Christopher Graybill, James Lewis, Tony Penny, Nanette Savard, Eric Messner, and Terence Azelford. Adapted and directed by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Richard Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Featuring original music composed and performed by Dan Smith and Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Warbreaker, be sure to look for R.A. Salvatore's Demon Wars saga, available now in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere and at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for exciting previews of other graphic audio material.
There.
You do not know me, King Daniel Brock Ursel, but you know of me. I am Father Abbot Markwart of the Abelican Order.
How can this be? How did you get past my guards?
Why are you so surprised, my king? You have witnessed the miracles of the gemstones. You are aware of their potential. Does it surprise you that I, the leader of the church, can make such contact?
I warn you!
No, my king. I am the one who issues a warning. The arrangement in Palmaris goes quite well. Bishop Dionero's work has been wondrous, and the city is functioning more efficiently than even before the war. Whatever threats the Baronese might spout, whatever the complaints of foolish merchants, the course of Palmaris has been determined. You will do nothing now to jeopardize that.
The day is ours! The day is ours!
I know who you are, Pony, friend of Nightbird. Jill, wife of Connor. I'm not a fool, and I have heard enough and seen enough to know you.
Have you then? And do you know enough of me to understand that I can take your life with but a thought?
Truly, you're the rogue that Dionero painted you to be.
Are we to fight then? And am I to use magic and destroy you? Or do you prefer it? Would you think it more fair if I went and retrieved my soul?
For years you have asked for the chance to fight the one named Nightbird. Your arguments have at last convinced me that Marcalo Dionero alone might bring this one to justice. When you slay Nightbird, his woman companion, and that filthy centaur beast, use Kilrani to help capture the rogues. If they resist, then kill them as well. Do not fail me in this.
I understand my role now. The calling that God brought to me when he led me to St. Mirabel and drove my body through hours of training. This hunt is the task for which Marcalo Dionero was born, and in it I shall not fail.
Very impressive. All that I would expect from the legends of Dwellafar.
Who are you? What doctor demon has arisen this time to bring grief to the world?
Demon? Why, my dear, tender little elf, you could not be further from the truth. Do you not recognize Marcalo Dionero, the Bishop of Palmaris?
And thus your church names the Dwellafar's enemies?
I name anyone who befriends the outlaw Nightbird as an enemy of the church.
And so you convict and execute without trial.
That is my prerogative.
Do you think you've the power to stop this? Avalore Sitortas Magnus!
Don't miss R.A. Salvatore's Demon Wars Saga, Book 3, The Demon Apostle, Part 2. Available now in Graphic Audio.
Serrano Legacy, Book 7, Against the Odds, Part 1, in Graphic Audio.
What?
Hands on your head. Don't move.
What's going on?
I have orders to separate you from the regular space service as of today.
I haven't done anything wrong.
Fleet has no place for your kind.
Squeeza, Esme, most recent rank 03, separated by order of Admiral Serrano? Grandmother, she double-crossed us.
Bad news.
What?
Peter Origamos, Consuline's foreign minister. Mother, killed him.
Miranda, you can't expect me to let it go.
Damn and blast, Cecilia. The man had my husband killed. He was a despicable, slimy...
Leave the Familius. I'll take you.
Halt breach. Report all Starboard aft teams.
Sir, we've got a peak our chem scan doesn't identify. Something with a molecular weight of 16.
16? Lieutenant, didn't I tell you to look out for methane?
Emergency. We have a potentially explosive gas mix.
Sir... I'm scared. I can't just stand here.
Sure you can. Smartest thing you can do.
No! Don't leave me behind!
No! Don't!
If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net. where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net.